Espresso.
Long time ago in Bethlehem, so the holy Bible. Hey, where's the music?
Coming up on Espresso Coffee Talk.
I don't think there's anything that's closer than spirit to spirit.
Okay, so you're not saying when you're talking about Adam and Eve speaking to God in some spirit, you're not saying that they had a language like English, Arabic, Aramaic, Hebrew, whatever, and then they spoke in tongues.
The following episode is sponsored by listeners like you. If you would like to sponsor or donate, please visit espressocoffeetalk.com. That's espressocoffeetalk.com. Recently, I found myself in the midst of a storm, not a physical storm, but a spiritual storm. And I've come to realize that even a grown man needs the voice of reasoning, the voice of his mom. So I called her up. 3 hours later, we probably have more questions than we have answers. So we're bringing this to you, to this platform. So with long pauses edited out and lots of contemplation, this is what we bring to you, navigating the perfect storm. So grab your cup of coffee, sit back, and enjoy the show. So you've listened to some of the other podcasts, and at the beginning that
the whole thing spiel,
the mom spiel.
Yeah.
I don't think people think that that's really.
I don't really care if they do. Honestly, I don't. I think it's kind of funny.
It is funny. But I'm. This is the voice of my real mom, not my simulated coffee talk mom, which kind of sounds like,
"Hi, honey."
Yeah, and you just put a face with that voice. And it ain't pretty.
It ain't pretty. I had somebody tell me, I got to tell you this. I had somebody tell me, and we can name drop after the recording, but I had somebody tell me Sunday, your mom is an absolute fox.
Who said that?
I'll tell you later.
Lord.
I'll tell you later. And all I said was, where do you think I get this?
That's a good answer.
This come from somewhere.
Yes. See, this come from somewhere.
That's right. That's right.
Now we know where.
That's right. Okay, so the other night I called you in part because I've been reading that Pilgrim's Progress book. And there comes a point where he's with different people throughout the whole book, and that the people have names. So like Faithful is a character in the book. His name is Christian in the book. Faithful. There's Ignorance. There's, I forget some of the other names, but there, all the people he runs across. And then there's some people that come across, his path and walk with him on this journey that he's on. Anyway, one of them is named Ignorance, and there's another one named Temporary. And they go through these sort of like, this is how Temporary views his faith. This is how Ignorance views his faith. And there were some points in there that I'm like, wow, I have either been there, or I sometimes wonder if I'm there. So I called you up the other night and we talked about the idea of justification. And so I'll ask you again for the sake of this podcast, but what in your in your mind, what do you think justification means for you?
Well, for me, I'd have to say to be justification would be justified. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is the only one that justifies me. Mm-hmm. I can't do it on my own. But I am, this might sound weird, but like it goes on record. Mm-hmm. Jesus, because of him dying on the cross for me, for my sins, I'm now justified in the eyes of God. I am justified in the presence, in his court. I am justified. Mm-hmm. I am righteous now. God has made me righteous. Now, does that mean I'm free to go live and do as I please? No. Yeah.
So, and I think where, and even in the book kind of alluded to this, where it kind of gets tripped up. Some people go, well, I'm justified. I'm justified in my actions. So, and in your mind, you have to go, okay, well, if I'm justified in my past actions, if it's justified never sinned, you know, or whatever, then moving forward, are my actions justified? And if that's the case, then it would seem like, well, then I could go do whatever, because no matter what I do, it's going to be justified in the eyes of God, because Jesus poured out his blood, and so I'm justified in everything that I do. Whether it's right or wrong, doesn't matter. And I think where people get tripped up is that it's not a justification of your actions, but it's more a justification of your person. So I myself am justified. But that justification sort of comes because there's a task now that has to happen. And God is going, okay, I have justified you. So really, you can't even come into the presence of the Lord. You can't come into the presence of perfection and everything holy and righteous and true on your own accord, because you're not. You have this sort of sinful nature going on in you. And you can't enter into that, into the courts of the Lord with that unrighteousness. So he says, I have justified you, the person, to be able to come into my presence. Now, through that justification, your job is to, I think Romans 12 says it, be transformed. Do not be conformed to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So if I surrender myself then to the Lord, he justified me so that I can be perfected. Now, if just by one act, now if I come into his presence, or now if I surrender myself rather, then he can be within me and he can transform me and sort of renew my mind. Doesn't mean that I'm going to never fall,
right,
or falter, but it means that as I do, I get back up again. I don't know your thoughts on that.
No, I agree. I agree with that 100%.
You also sort of sparked a question about why God didn't just, and Dan and I have talked about this too, like, why didn't God just end it? Once the fall of man happened, why didn't God just end it? Tell me your thoughts on that.
Well, I have that question. I still have that question. I suppose, as I told you, when this is all over, and the answer to that question probably won't even matter at that point.
Right.
As to the why. But it makes you wonder why God, being the ultimate authority in all things, the utmost, the beginning and end to everything, mm-hmm. why is it that he didn't just end it. Well, I mean, why didn't God just take care of Satan and all of the evil that entails there? Why did he not just end it? Because he could have.
Yeah.
So I asked my question. I mean, it's not the most important thing to know, but yeah, that question's there. Why? You know, we talked a little bit about it, but why did it have to go on the way that it went on? And all these things, my question to you was, why do all these things have to play out? Why do they have to happen? You know, to get to this end result. Mm-hmm. Because it's like it goes full circle. Mm-hmm. It comes full circle. So yeah. Why... What were God's thoughts on it all? And, you know, why?
There are a couple of things that I have I've noticed in the Bible, I guess. That is that God always sets before his people, from the very beginning of time, a blessing and a curse. So if you, and it's contingent, if you do this, you'll be blessed. But if you do this, you'll be cursed. So they're in the garden. And they've got, you know, this big garden. And they've got all the provision they need. And they've got the tree of life there. And then they've got the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And God says, you can eat from the tree of life freely. Which, by the way, if you do, you would have everlasting life, right? If you choose to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you'll certainly die. That's the curse. Well, I mean, there's more. That's the curse. The curse then is also on the land. And then the curse, and what's interesting about that whole thing is that God never curses man except for death, to say that there's death. The curse is that now man has to die. But he never curses man after that. What he does is he judges man, but he curses the serpent. Mm-hmm. And that's for all time then. But he judges man. By the sweat of your brow, you're going to have to toil, and you're going to have to work for your provision. Whereas before you had it. And Moses in the wilderness. So they're in the wilderness. And here's the thing about the wilderness is that even though that they're not in paradise or the land of promise, even though they're in the middle of a desert or whatever, God still provides for them. Whether it's manna from heaven, whether it's water from a rock, whatever it is, God still provides for them. And Moses says to the people, I set before you a blessing and a curse. If you do this over here, you'll be blessed, especially when you enter into the land, because you're going to enter into the land of paradise. You've spent 40 years now in this desert. He doesn't say this, but I mean, essentially he is. You've spent 40 years in the desert now. God has shown you his provision, even in the desert. But now you're about to enter into the land of promise, the land of milk and honey, the land, you know, whatever. And if you remain in this mindset of the Lord provides, which means you have to surrender to him, which means you can't do this on your own, which means God has to be your God. If you remain here and you do these things that I'm commanding you, there will be a blessing. But if you choose not to, then there will be a curse. Just like with Adam and Eve, there'll be a curse. Fast forward into the new covenant. It's, I set before you a blessing and a curse. Again, it's not written like that, but it essentially is. If you choose, Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you come to me, all who are thirsty, come to me. I will give you streams of living water will flow from within. And I am the bread of life. You know, that kind of thing. So if you partake in that provision, and if he says, if you follow my commands, you are my people, you're my friends. I call you my friends. But if you don't, well, then there's a judgment that comes to pass. All men, because Adam and Eve ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, all men now are judged by the law. And that's what, even back in the garden, all men, the tree of life represented, you know, being surrendered to God and his provision, Jesus, salvation, deliverance, all that. And then the tree of the knowledge of good and evil represents the law. The tree itself is not bad, but putting yourself under that umbrella is not good, because there's a judgment and you'll be judged by that law. You'll be judged by good versus evil. And if you can't uphold that law, well, then you're in trouble by that judgment. So now back to the justification piece. Well, I can't, because from the point that they ate from the tree of good and evil, I've become judged by the law, and I can't do it. I have proven I can't do it. Mm-hmm. So I guess then back to the justification piece is, now I'm justified as a person through the provision of God. And just like the very beginning, he's saying, you can't do this without me. And yet man continues to think that they can. You see that? You said today. Over and over again.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I guess I think my mind goes to, what all did Adam know?
Right.
What did Adam really know before he sinned? Before he took part in the tree of knowledge of good and evil?
And did it matter?
Yeah. Did it? And yet, Adam succumbed to, I'd say it, but the wiles of the woman.
Damn women. Yeah, that's true.
This makes you wonder. But God, being God, knew, he had to have known that Adam would fall.
Why do you think he had to know? Because I think there are people out there that are really dead set on, if all this is true, that maybe God didn't know. So what makes you think that God had to know?
Well, for me personally, knowing that God is a jealous God. He loves us. He created us, and he wanted us to love him, trust him with all of our being, everything that was within us that he created us from, in the image of himself. He wanted us to love, serve, trust, obey, all that. He's a jealous God. And I believe that God is all-knowing. I know some people don't believe that. That's fine. But I believe he is.
So you say jealous God. And the word, I mean, the Bible says that he's a jealous God. That's a tough pill to swallow, mm-hmm. that God is a jealous God. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean to you?
Well, you know, just like... Take my, you know, okay, like Pops and I, mm-hmm. if I would be jealous, I'm jealous for his love. Not that I'm supposed to be, quote, jealous, but I don't want him to go love somebody else the way I want him to love me, or even your grandchildren or your children. Love me. I want you to love me.
Right.
And it's much bigger and broader than that with God, but kind of in that context a little bit, you know, like that. I want you to love me. I want you to live eternally with me. I don't want you to go and be on the other side of this.
Right.
Because I have given you a will. You can deny me. Mm-hmm. You know, and there comes that point where I think God, he keeps coming back. He's going to keep knocking at that door. But there will come a point where you will have to make your decision. Mm-hmm. Do you love me? Do you want to live forever with me, worship me, serve me, honor me? Or do you want to be over there?
Right.
So maybe that's wrong. Maybe my outlook on that's wrong, but that's kind of how.
Well, I mean, if he's a creator, if it's true that he's a creator and you are his creation by design, then I would think that he would be, in effect, jealous. I mean, it would be like that. Yeah. So let's say you as a mom go, okay, this is my son, you know, or these are my sons, me and my brother. These are my sons. But let's say, my brother, because gosh, I'm too perfect for this.
Glad you're laughing.
let's say that either one of us go and there is another lady that we have just taken on more as a mother figure. How would that make you feel?
Oh yeah. Deeply hurt.
Yeah. Deeply and hurt. I think that that's probably what maybe, I think you're right. I think God is going, look, I've created you. And by default now, there is that covenant with God. And people, I'm sure there are people out there who are going to go, now, wait a minute. God has created some people for destruction because he says, Pharaoh, he created Pharaoh for this very purpose and he hardened his heart and blah, blah, blah. But what I'm saying is that the Bible also says that God so loved the world and he doesn't wish for any to perish. In fact, I forget what scripture or where it's at, but he says that I don't even delight in the death of the wicked. I think it's Ezekiel 33. He says, I don't delight in the death of the wicked.
Right.
Right. So you have this God who's going, I have created these people for, I really want them to be with me in this place called paradise. But I also know that there is a path or multiple paths to destruction. And so these people, there are people who won't choose the narrow gate, the narrow way.
The narrow pathway. Yes.
Yeah. And they will end up into that place of destruction. A tough pill for us to swallow, but wow. I mean, if you're God, here's the other question. If God knows, and we don't have to get into predestination or anything, but if God knows, you know, the people that are headed towards destruction, do you still think that it's a tough pill for him to swallow?
Yeah, I do. And I think that's why I believe that God will give every opportunity, absolutely every opportunity, for you to choose him. Because that would be hard to say, that one's lost. It totally has denied me over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, to the end.
To the end. And now we're to that point.
Right.
So what is that point? That's another whole thing. But what is at that point? Mm-hmm. Is it at the moment that you die? I don't know. It might not come till the final judgment day. When you stand before God himself, maybe even then he might say, okay, here we are. Mm-hmm. Do you deny me this day?
Right.
And if you do, we part ways. Mm-hmm. Now we part ways because you have chosen.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the beginning, and let's talk about when God created Eden.
Eden?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you were telling me the other night, as you grew up, that when God created these things, when God created all things, that Eden, the Garden of Eden, was pretty much, that's what it was. That was all.
Yeah, that's the, growing up, that was the understanding that I had. That's how I believed. Mm-hmm.
Was it taught that way, or was it just more like that's just...
I don't think anyone expounded much on it. It was the Garden of Eden. Mm-hmm. That here it is, the Garden of Eden. And it was never talked about really what was outside the garden. Like you and I talked, that the garden was a portion of Eden set aside for Adam. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. That never came up in any Sunday school Bible study I've ever been to. So when you brought that up, that it was like, wow, okay. You know, so in my mind now, things are being a little bit refigured here a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because I always thought, the Garden of Eden was it.
Yeah.
You know, and growing up, then you begin to think, so when Adam and Eve were expelled from the garden, well, where'd they go? Mm-hmm. What was out there? Where'd they go? Mm-hmm. See, in a sense, in my mind as a child, you just thought, well, the garden was just destroyed. So there was nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's where they were at, in this desolate place where there was nothingness. So now go out and work it.
Yeah.
And in a sense, it was probably a lot like nothingness, desolate outside the garden, where every provision. But there again, what about Eden?
And how big was Eden?
Yeah, how big was Eden? And could they not go back into Eden, or was it just the garden?
Yeah, because I think the Bible says that they were, we'd have to look it up, but I think the Bible says that they were kicked out of the garden, and that the way to the tree of life was guarded by cherubim or whatever, like the flaming swords and whatever. I'm going to go see if I can look that up while we're talking. But anyway, so Eden then, do you think it was, do you think the whole place had provision, or do you think it was the garden that just had?
That's a really good question. I guess, I don't know, because I don't know what all Eden entailed. How big or vast that was compared to the whole earth at that time, what that even looked like, or I would have to think there would have been some provision there. Mm-hmm. Some provision, maybe not. I think the garden had to be someplace very special. And it was because of the two trees. Mm-hmm. you know, that something was there that was no place else. Mm-hmm. And by design.
This just brings up so many questions as far as the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Do you think, and I'm just going to ask this because I don't know. I'm going to say no, but I don't know. Do you think man would have been judged according to the standards of the law had they not eaten from the tree of good and evil, the knowledge of good and evil?
The law? No. I don't see that. I don't see any. I don't know that there'd be a reason to be judged by the law had they not eaten from that tree. Mm-hmm.
And the next question is, could they have sinned in any other way other than not eating from that tree?
I would have to say no. No, because they were made perfect. Adam was made perfect. Mm-hmm. And there was no knowledge of evil.
Evil.
So, I mean, even just thinking about that, the fact that Adam gave in, he succumbed to that, just sometimes blows my mind because he walked and talked with God.
Yeah.
What else more would you want? You know, there's so many different ways you can, thoughts, avenues you can go down, you know, as to the questions that you might have for God himself is, why did Adam need a helpmate?
Yeah.
Why did he? He had everything he needed. But then yet God himself said that Adam needed a helpmate.
Wasn't good for him to be alone.
Yep. And why?
And was God, was the presence of God as far as a physical manifestation, was he in the garden? Because the Bible says that in the cool of the evening, it was the voice of God that Adam heard.
I believe myself, and I don't have anything really to base this on, and I've told you this before too, that I believe that when Adam walked and talked with God, it was they walked and talked in spirit.
Yeah.
Spirit to spirit. I don't think you can get any closer than that, honestly.
Sure.
You know, we think of flesh being able to touch flesh, but I don't think there's anything that's closer than spirit to spirit.
Okay, so you're not saying, when you're talking about Adam and Eve speaking to God in spirit, you're not saying that they had a language like English, Arabic, Aramaic, Hebrew, whatever, and no. Then they spoke in tongues.
No, no. This is like an unspoken communication between God and Adam and then Eve. Mm-hmm. That I believe that the relationship between God and Adam was just so above and beyond any relationship that any of us can quite fathom. And that's why it's hard for me to believe that Adam would have succumbed to, you know, the sin. But for whatever reason,
it did.
If I can, if you don't mind, I'll share a dream or a vision. I don't know which I had, but about a year and a half ago, I remember lying in bed and thinking, you know, Jesus, there has to be more. I've thought that more than once. There has to be more to all this life, this the relationship between us. There has to be something more than just this. And I had this, I'll call it a dream for lack of not knowing for sure, that I was in the presence of Jesus. Mm-hmm. He was massive. I mean, huge. My head did not even, top of my head didn't even reach his waist. But we were walking. And we were walking on dirt. Mm. I've never felt dirt on my feet like that before. It was cool, but not wet. It was, your feet would sink in, and it would, you could feel it rise up between your toes, and it would leave prints in it, but yet you weren't, your feet didn't get dirty. It wasn't wet, but yet it felt cool, almost misty, like there was a mist like that come up from it. But, and the smell of it, the smell of this dirt, I can't even describe. It was like, you could say clean dirt. What does clean dirt smell like? I don't know, but it was just the scent that was awesome. And ferns, there were these fresh little trindles of ferns that were starting to sprig up out of this dirt. And I remember Jesus was wearing a white, bright white gown, and this rope, this gold rope that hung from his waist, which I couldn't even see, hung down. It was massive. It was a heavy corded gold rope that hung from him. And we were walking, and yet we were having conversation, but we were not talking. There was no language, you know, like you said, you know, French, Spanish, whatever. There was, we weren't speaking like we are now, but there was communication there. There was this a closeness, like you just, it was almost like a heart on a heart, is kind of what that felt like. He knew my heart and I knew his heart, and we spoke to each other without language. So that's what I mean when I say I believe that Adam, when he walked and talked with God, that's how close Adam was to God. And there didn't have to be a language, because God knew Adam and Adam knew God.
Interesting. So, and you also said too that you're not, I mean, the way to describe Adam or Eve for that matter, you're not sure that they looked like, we have flesh and bone covered in skin and like seven layers of skin.
Yes.
And you're saying.
Yeah, I don't, that's me again. I got nothing to go on, but I do not believe that Adam and Eve had this fleshly, at that time there wouldn't have been a need for it, honestly, when you think about it, because Jesus is God in flesh, God made man. That didn't need to happen till later. So I don't personally believe that Adam and Eve had all this layering of skin, because I don't believe they needed it. I don't think they needed it until they left the garden, and God provided that, because that body now was going to need, because it was a body of flesh now, that it was going to need that covering.
So this is just a side point, I think, probably. Interesting to note is that it says that God banished them. It does. I was looking that up a little bit ago. It does say that God banished them from the Garden of Eden, and they went east. According to Genesis, they went east. And archaeologists nowadays I don't remember how long ago it was, but there was an archaeologist or a group of archaeologists that said the earliest known agricultural civilization or whatever. No, the earliest known start of agriculture itself, you can trace it back east of the Jordan River.
Interesting.
And then what happens is it follows, it eventually goes east, but it follows this sort of crescent. And if you look up, there's a thing called, you can Google it if you want, but there was a thing called the Fertile Crescent in it. And it spans from like the Jordan River area, and it goes up along the Mediterranean or whatever, something like that. But then it ends in Mesopotamia, Babylon, where like the Tigris and the Euphrates are. But it's where the land is most fertile.
In that area.
Well, pretty much anywhere, the land is most fertile there. And it goes back to where, my point is it would go back to where we said, well, there was a river running through Eden. And at some point it broke off into four rivers that watered the rest of the world. That gave nourishment to the rest of the world.
So then, back then, do you think the land was divided? Or do you think it was all one? The land of the earth was all one mass. And that was considered Eden? Or is it, do you think Eden is still just a portion of land that was set? I don't know.
So you're saying, like, I think it's called Pangaea, where everything is one mass, and then maybe the flood sort of divided it out. I think that that's plausible. I think that there's good proof to say that that's plausible. I don't know if it was all Eden, though. I think when Moses is telling the story, because he's the one that wrote the first five books, when Moses is telling the story, and here's the other thing, they know things that they're just unspoken. It's kind of like common knowledge, but we're not getting it. Mm-hmm. Makes me think that there are other stories out there that we don't, or not able to access, or maybe I haven't read some of the Apocrypha stuff. There are people out there who say that some of these books, they go hand in hand with scripture. So worth the read. Maybe there's stuff in there too. But there is common knowledge, obviously, that Moses in the first five books of the Bible that we have, there's common knowledge that we're not being told. But it's unspoken. They know it. And so he writes, he goes, well, over there in the land of Eden, now I don't know if, going back to your question, I don't know if everything was Eden at one point and then it just sort of came down to this one little specific spot. I don't feel like that's the answer, but that's just me. Because like you said, there was other things out there. Like even Cain, when he's banished to wander. Mm-hmm. He's going, what if somebody?
Yeah.
What? Well, not
who's
knowing.
The somebody?
Yeah.
Who are you talking about?
Who would be out there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they had to have some knowledge. That's why I wonder, even with Adam and Eve, did they know of what was out there? Or because they did not know evil, they had no knowledge of that. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. Were there other things out there outside? Because they were told to
guard it. Absolutely.
Our translations say just to keep it. But that word in Hebrew, it literally means to guard it. And you have to go, what are you guarding it from? And if you have no knowledge of evil, it's a hard concept to think, well, they're guarding it from evil.
Right.
They just know they're to guard the garden. It is from evil, but they just know that they are to guard the garden. Mm-hmm. Here's the deal. You have been given this provision. You are sort of, for a lack of better way to say it, you are in covenant with this land. You have a task with this land, and you're to cultivate it, but you're to keep it and protect it with all that you have. And I think we could probably grab that concept maybe even a little more than Adam and Eve could, because there was no knowledge of evil. Any outside influence whatsoever, keep this. Protect it with your life, because this is your provision. Mm-hmm. Protect it with all that you have. Jesus says, don't let anyone steal your crown. It's in Revelation 3, I think. Don't let anyone steal your crown. So protect it with all that you have. This is your provision. And so, yeah, they didn't, it was harder for them because they didn't understand evil. But like you said, to get kicked out of Eden, there's something out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, they had to see a major difference just by having, not being in the garden. Even just, I would think there would have been some kind of fear even come over them, like almost like I have to look over my shoulder all the time now. You know, not that God's not going to take care of me, because He promises that He will.
He will, yeah. And He did.
Yes, He did. But yeah, there had to come a knowledge that there's things out there.
But here's the flip side of that coin, is that when God does kick them out, He says, cursed is the land, and you will have to work for it. And where I'm going with that is, that insinuates to me that, because He says, because of what you've done, cursed is the land. Well, then was it cursed before? Was the land outside the garden cursed before Adam and Eve sinned? Because that's what He says. Because you have done this, cursed is the land. But you don't have a way into the garden. The garden isn't cursed.
So
or is it? But either way, they've been kicked out of the garden. So, and then He says, cursed is the land because of what you've done, and now you're going to have to work for what you've... It just opens up that hole.
Well, yeah, then immediately my mind goes to... You kicked out of the garden where the tree of life is. Mm-hmm. And now you're going to have to go through all this to get back to that.
To get back to the garden.
And this is what it's going to take. Mm-hmm. Which is turns out to, you know, Jesus, you're going to see that you can't follow just the law. I'm mm-hmm. going to give this law to the land, to my people, and they're not going to be able to do it.
But I wonder if the law was already in place. And what I mean by that is, good and evil were already there, mm-hmm. in the sense that they were defined. Because if evil wasn't a thing, there wouldn't be the knowledge of good and evil. So good and evil, they were defined by that point. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if the law, so that means the law was already set in motion, almost like a law of nature, mm-hmm. like law of gravity. We call it law of gravity. You can't be put into midair and expect not to fall. You're going to fall.
Right.
Unless you have some other provision, which I don't know what that would be, but if you by yourself, without any airplane or anything, or suspended into midair somehow, you're going to fall. What goes up must come down. Same with this law of good and evil. It's there. So in effect, the Torah is there. It's already in place. But Adam and Eve they were created to be in complete surrender to God without having the need to know the good and the evil.
Right.
But because they invited the evil in by wanting to know, they're no longer in surrender to God. And so now the law has to be known. And you're right. The pathway back to the tree of life is not the law.
No.
Because what they left or what they walked away from was complete surrender. Mm-hmm. Which takes you back to Romans 12. Offer yourselves daily as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing. That's a complete surrender. And then through that, you're transformed. So has that been the plan all along?
It makes sense. I mean, really, if you think about it, it makes sense that as you and I talked, that it had to be this way.
Yeah.
It had to be this way. So if it had to be this way, then what's the outcome? Where does it take us? And what's the outcome? That becomes the big question then. So, okay, we got to go through all this. Adam and Eve did that. Now we got to go through throughout time, all this stuff mm-hmm. that had to take place. And I think a lot of it too was to show us too that you can't do it without God. Mm-hmm. No matter how hard you try.
Right.
You are nothing. We are nothing without God.
Yeah.
The fact that we just even breathe is authorized by God himself. Every breath you take is authorized by God. You know, my next breath could be I'm on the floor gasping for air and die. Heaven forbid. Well, that's not happening. I'm just saying, you know, without God.
Sure.
My every breath. Because I am nothing without him. Everything separates me from him. Mm-hmm. Can you totally surrender? Do we have the capability to totally surrender? Can we do that?
Yeah.
I mean, we try. I think we try, and I don't know that we have a full understanding of what that even really means to truly, totally surrender. I think sometimes we think we do, but in all reality, we don't.
Well, let's go back to the garden. They were in complete surrender, and there was something to deter them. Mm-hmm. Well, now we have many things to deter us.
Many, many, many.
Can we still be in complete surrender? Yeah, but isn't that what then when he says, and be transformed? Isn't the transformation part of it?
It has to be.
Like you can't be transformed and then complete surrender. It has to be complete surrender and then transfer. That's why I go back to the question. If they were in the garden, could they have sinned in any other way? If I'm justified, if my person is justified, then I have to be transformed back to that state of perfection. And not just it can't just be that my actions are justified, but my heart becomes justified. My body becomes justified. My mind becomes justified. And my heart becomes changed.
Right. Right.
Not just, oh, well, I'm justified and can continue on. No, I'm justified to come into a place of complete surrender where I'm now transformed by the renewing of my mind. Because he already says in Jeremiah 31, I'm making a covenant and putting my law in their hearts.
Right. And there has to be.
And I'm not.
There has to be a change of heart and a mindset, which then I think there has to become a desire within the heart. Then if you have a change of heart, the desire should change.
Yeah.
You know, I should no longer desire to do that thing over there, or whatever that is not pleasing to God, mm-hmm. you know, and he doesn't want that to be a part of my life, my walk with him. That has to go. So there has to be new desire. The old has to fade away.
To fade, yeah.
And I don't look back. I'll say this, as I've told you, mm-hmm. also, smoking.
Right.
You know, I don't know how, I couldn't tell you how many years I smoked. But honestly, that during that time, I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, I enjoyed smoking. You know, I look forward to getting up and having a cup of coffee and smoking a cigarette. You know, friends would come over, they smoke, we'd smoke. We'd have get together and talk and smoke and have our coffee and just have a good old time, you know, until God told me that has to go. Mm-hmm. You got to stop. Because if you don't, just like that, bad things are going to happen.
And you had a little taste of it.
Yeah. I mean, I quit once, started up, quit again, started up. The third time he told me, the voice was loud and clear. You don't stop now, bad things are going to happen. And then that's when the coughing started and this black stuff started coming up out of my lungs. And it's like, okay, you know, God is serious. Mm-hmm. And I better get serious too.
Right.
So I did. I quit. Just like that. I don't have the desire to smoke again. Mm. That thought does not cross my mind at all. And I don't want it to. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go back to that because I know that's not what God wants in my life. It's not where I need to be. And I think the fact that I enjoyed it so much... Mm-hmm. You know, because I probably put that pretty high on my list back then. Mm-hmm. You know, my waking thought. Get everybody off to school and I get to go sit down and go outside and sit down and have a cigarette and a cup of coffee. Instead of maybe you ought to be thinking about me. God is saying maybe you should be thinking about me. Got other things for you to do, not wasting your time doing that. Mm-hmm. You know.
Which in itself has been a journey too.
Absolutely.
And letting go of some of the things of the past, then, I mean, what I'm saying is going down the journey of the road ahead has, I mean, just years of conversation and obviously, you know, knowing and being a part of it to see some of the things, even just for you, some of the things that you have gone through since then, some of the things that God has led you through since then, some of the spiritual battles, some of the spiritual journeys mm-hmm. that you've gone through since then, some of the knowledge that you've come into, mm-hmm. some of the understandings that you've come into. I mean, a lot has happened. And I think that that comes with that surrender.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't move forward. You can't take that journey if you don't surrender. Right. You won't walk that path mm-hmm. if you don't surrender. You'll go down another path. Mm-hmm. You're not going to walk that path if you don't surrender.
Yeah.
Not saying that when you're on that path and in that journey that you won't falter, you won't fall. But there again, you have to rely on God to give you every provision in those times. And that one of those provisions is being able to say no. Mm-hmm. No.
Right.
Okay. I see that. No.
Right.
I hear that. No.
Right.
No. That temptation. No.
So this brings me to my question then that I asked you the other night. Do you think the perfect plan is... the end result, rather, is you now have, God has now has a creation of people that
that have gone through the battles, the journeys of knowing good and evil, but they are now in complete surrender, packed with the knowledge of good and evil. They're now in complete surrender and in worship to Him for all eternity. Now it's like that protection is now up. You've been through the good and evil. You've journeyed through it. You've chosen good. You've now in complete surrender. And by the end of all, there's nothing that can come against you now. I mean, there's just no deceptions. Like in the garden, in the paradise to come, there's just no deception that can come now, because what else is there?
Right.
I mean, outside of good and evil, what else is there that could come to deceive you? Because that would just be evil. But you've battled that and you've won that battle through Jesus, but you've battled that and you've won that battle for all eternity. Now there's nothing. There's no temptation now. There's no deception now. It can't come. It's been won. The victory's been won. Whereas in the beginning, it wasn't that. There was complete surrender, but they weren't packed with the knowledge of good and evil. And so there was that ability to deceive them. They were vulnerable. They were vulnerable when they stepped outside of the surrender. But now, you know, we're going through this good and evil stuff. And so do we have to battle it? Yes. Do we have to see the bad things? Yes. Does it suck? Yes. But at the end of it all, there has to be a victory.
Right. Right. And I believe that we are in a time of an awakening. Because I think we, like you said, all these things have already happened. And the Bible has already laid it all out. I mean, the stories from back then to now. The Old Testament, to me, helps to provide the answers to what to do and what not to do. In these times.
Right.
It's already been done. Here's what God told them to do or not to do. Those stories have been told. So there are examples for moving forward. But I think we're in an awakening time where people are seeing evil for what it is. Knowing that God is good. All that God is. We're coming to a better knowledge of who God is, I hope. I hope we're seeing more and more of God. Will we ever have full knowledge of God? And you and I talked about this too. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Because I think that is infinite. And I told you, I believe that in even when everything's done, evil's sent away for all eternity, and those that are with God for all eternity, with Jesus for all eternity, God will never cease to amaze us because He is infinite. Mm. He goes on and on. We will stand in awe of Him forever and ever and ever. So will we have full knowledge of God? No, I don't believe that we will. And I'm okay with that because I think that is so cool.
Sure.
You know, be like me coming to you every day, knowing you, but you know, you just amaze me every day. Hmm. You show me something.
Oh, more keep and talking. More every day. And I thank you for that.
And you do. You be teaching your mom.
You amaze me every day.
But I think we're coming to that point where choose ye this day whom mm-hmm. you're going to serve. Mm-hmm. You know, who do you choose? You can't ride the fence. You're one side or the other.
Right.
And we have to take, I think we have to take a really hard look at ourselves, our fruit. Mm-hmm. What fruit am I bearing? Am I bearing any fruit? Because if I'm not, or I'm bearing very little, then work always needs to be done, but I've got to get to work here.
Yeah. Right. And no turning back.
Right. There's no turning back.
Yeah.
And that kind of reminds, I won't go into all of it, but that reminds me of that, and you know what dream I'm talking about, where we're standing and there's the roots of the trees.
Right.
And, you know, we know that we got to do something.
Right.
Because that dividing's coming. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So the end or the, well, let me just call this, and maybe this is what the title of this podcast will be, that we really are navigating through the perfect storm. I mean, it in for all intents and purposes, this is the perfect storm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
I believe it is. I believe it is. And either we're going to take the hand of Jesus and we're going to walk on water, or we're not.
Yeah. The waves are there.
Oh, yeah. Every day.
And they're going to be there. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a smooth body of water to walk on.
No. You're going to see the storm. You're going to hear the storm. You're going to feel the storm. You're going to be... right in it. Mm.
And you have the full potential of sinking.
Absolutely.
And that's where I think too many people maybe grab a hold of the wrong thing or the wrong hand, thinking that it's Jesus. Mm. Thinking that they're grabbing the hand of Jesus. If I do this over here,
this will save me. This will
take
care of me. This will be my provision. This will, Because there's so many things out there, so many more things out there that present themselves to us falsely, that you're easily swayed to grab hold of.
Right. For sure. Well, I think that we have probably not answered any question whatsoever.
Probably not. I don't even answer my own questions. I could probably create more.
I think we do.
And that's okay too. And like I told you, all the questions that I have, and they're numerous. In the end, will the answers matter? I don't think they will. I don't even think those questions will. But for now, they.
What was that game years ago? There was a game. Was it Minecraft? Well, not Minecraft. It was on computer. It wasn't Solitaire, it was the other one.
Oh, yeah, what was that called?
And what you would do is you would click on a box, and then it would open up all these different... And if you got a mine, then the game was done.
Yeah, what was that called? I forget what that was called.
I don't remember. But that's what this seems like. We click on a box, and it just opens up so many other questions. And then you got to click on another box. And pretty soon it opens up a whole nother door of questions. And it's almost like we try to answer the questions. And when you click on the box, once again, it just...
opens up so much. Yeah, so much more stuff. But that's what it seems like this does. But I think also it brings about revelation.
Right. It's good. I think it's good to have questions. Mm-hmm. I think it's good to think, to research, to the want to know. But there again, I think there's that line that we can cross with it, just like Adam did.
Right.
The want to know, that knowledge. Mm-hmm. It got him. It snagged him. So we have to be careful. And we know that God has all the answers. He knows it all. He knows it all. And you know, I think as time goes, maybe, and for each person, I think the things that are needed to be known might be a little different.
Sure.
What you need to know to get take you through your journey might be a little different than the things that I may need to know to, you know, take my own journey. Mm-hmm. So forth and so forth. But God's the one with all the answers.
Right.
He's in the know.
Right. I agree. All right. That is that today. Your first ever podcast. How you feel?
First ever. Well, got one under my belt. There may be another. There may not be.
Well, what do you think? If I asked you to come back, would you do it?
Yeah, I'd come back. I truly enjoy our conversations. I learn things and you make me think, expand my thought process.
Even if it's being recorded?
Even if it's being recorded. Oh, boy.
For the world to hear.
For the whole world to hear, if they do so desire.
I don't know. Again, you a fox, so somebody might. Okay. I got to see what this fox is all about.
As long as it's a silver one.
Okay. Yeah. Well, until next time. Did you enjoy today's episode? Why not subscribe to Espresso Coffee Talk? Stay in the know. Get some alerts when new episodes come out. Did you love today's episode? Why not send some love in return? Give me some stars in your podcast app. Leave me some comments. Let me know how I'm doing. Just please, please be gentle.